Hi, it's Michael Cade from Veeam Software. You're listening to the Virtually Speaking podcast.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 18. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me as always is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, buddy?
I am excited for the 4th coming up here.
Oh yeah, big plans?
Yeah, I've got a shipment of fireworks coming into town.
Stop it. Are you one of those guys that goes like south of the border to get these illegal fireworks?
So they're not illegal, although actually in Houston they are. So hopefully HPD is not monitoring my house. But I've got an old family farm south of here that's outside the city limits. And yeah, we like to celebrate our country by blowing up a small piece of it. I think the quote from Simpsons.
When I was younger, it seemed like you could go and get fireworks anywhere and they could blow your hand off. But now everywhere you go, it's like sparkles and little, I don't know, fireworks have really, they're not the same unless you go and see them somewhere where they're more
violent.
Violent side of it.
In Texas, yeah, I mean, we have burn bans and things, which I need to make sure we're not under. But the little mini rockets, I've actually had to get those brought in from Tennessee before because you can't buy them in the state.
Yeah, I think I'm going to lay low. You know, I'm done with the crowds and all of the heat and the bugs. And so I think my 4th of July is going to be something along the lines of cold beer and a barbecue.
Sounds like a good plan.
Absolutely. Well, hey, we're not here to talk about the 4th of July. We are here to talk about Veeam. And this is a guest that we've been waiting to get on for a while. I've been patient, but yes, I'm very, very, very happy that we can finally bring on Mr. Rick Vanover. He's a senior product strategy manager over there. You probably know Rick from many places. He's a blogger. He's got multiple podcasts that I want to talk to him about. But he also runs the Veeam Vanguard program. That's a program that you're in, right, John?
Yeah, 2 years running.
Sweet. So we'll have to talk about that too. So, all right, without any further ado, Rick, welcome to the podcast.
Hey guys, John, Pedro, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
Rick, before we even get started, I have a little funny story. I used to work at NetApp, and the intro music to the NetApp podcast has a little soundbite of you saying, "I love NetApp." And a lot of people, when they listen to that podcast, that's the one thing that they always, when they come and talk to me, they always bring up the "I love NetApp." And they're always like, "Who is that?" And I'm like, "That's actually Rick Vanover." Did you ever hear that?
I heard that, and I heard about that. It's funny because that was from a different podcast that I'm a co-conspirator of, the In Tech We Trust podcast, and we were talking about NetApp, and you know, I'm not a storage expert, right? But one thing I was trying to challenge the conversation was among traditional storage arrays. I was challenging that, you know, NetApp has a very advanced software stack. I mean, there's a lot of new stuff out there today, and I really like them and appreciate them for that. And that's why I kind of popped that out with excellent enthusiasm.
Oh, the backup to that you may not know is the week prior, Nigel was just trashing NetApp and he was into a bit of a habit of doing that at the time. And so I happened to tweet something that said, it's the I Hate NetApp show. And Nigel caught wind of it and responded. And the very next episode of your podcast was called the I Hate NetApp show. And so your response to that was, you know, he was like, "We don't hate NetApp." And you're like, "I love NetApp." And so I was like, "You know what? I'm going to throw that in the podcast."
Well, and it's also, it just depends on, you know, your backgrounds. And, you know, Nigel's focusing on some newer stuff today, you know, and that's one of the benefits of the broader IT community, because you get personalities, and we have no shortage of those. But
absolutely,
you get personalities with different backgrounds, different perspectives. And, you know, the broader IT stuff that we all do, there's room for everything and everybody now. You know, the Internet of Things absolutely applies to the data center, which is where we play. So, you know, I'm all for it. Bring it all on.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, listen, before we even get started, I'm excited to hear about what's new with Veeam. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about you, Rick. You're a pretty busy guy. Let's start. You do two different podcasts. So tell me, what are the two podcasts that you're doing?
Yeah. So, you know, I do the Veeam Community Podcast, which is something I started right when I joined Veeam. And that one's a little bit different. You know, you guys are doing a little bit of that too, in a sense of it's like not about Veeam at all. I've done everything from talking about mobile phones to Google Glass to, yep, you know, storage this, software defined that. I love the variety because they're a bigger adjacency to what we do in this technology journey. So I'm really close to a big milestone of listens there. So I like that one. One of my coworkers, Clint Wyckoff, has also started taking on the burden of some hosting duties because it's actually tough to always come up with new content. And, you know, I go on to say it's all about the guests on that show. It's not about me. It's the guests. Yep. And I like it very private. I make it just usually one guest, maybe two. And then I cap it at 30 minutes, you know, pretty consumable in that regard.
Yeah.
The other podcast, the In Tech We Trust podcast, is me and four other persons, really, if we all can make it, will, you know, talk about news, industry trends and all that, and kind of go hard on the opinions and such. I like that. But even before those two podcasts, I had two other ones, which were over time kind of morphed and deprecated of sorts. The first of those where I came in at the end on the InfoSmack podcast with Nigel.
Yep.
It was him and I. And then before that, Virtumania with Rich Bramley. So done a few of those. Definitely got the or I don't have the TV face working on that, but I've got the radio voice of sorts. And yeah, it's a busy space that I'm in. I mean, I do the two podcasts. I try to do what I can in the blogosphere and you know, Microsoft MVP, VXpert, Cisco Champion. I've been working a lot of different things in a lot of different segments of technology. So El Ricotron is definitely busy.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the things I really love about the Veeam podcast that you do, and we try to have that same mantra here, is that we are not the experts that are communicating authoritatively to the listeners. You know, we are the guys with the questions. We find the smart people. We get the answers. And so I think that's a really great approach. And both podcasts, I think they're very diverse, which is why we also don't try to compete with a podcast like In Tech We Trust. I think that's a great podcast. I listen to it myself. So we don't try to get too topical on all the different news topics and have all these heavy opinions on the different companies, because really we're just more interested in specific you know, pieces of information of different types of technology, and we just want to learn about it and share it. So different goals.
Rock on.
So before we dive into what's new at Veeam, I want to talk a little bit about the Veeam Vanguard program. I'm new to the program. I did not know about it until John told me about it. But I think those types of programs are really valuable. So tell me a little bit about how it got started and what your role is.
You know, they are valuable. And collectively, this is, I don't want to just say yet another influencer program, but the Vanguard program is something that my team of evangelists administer. So there are four evangelists in the Veeam technical product marketing group is what we were called. And this journey goes back to 2014. And our president and CEO at the time was like, you know, Rick, are we ready for something like this? And I'm like, yes, almost. And I said, the almost is because I need two things in place. I need more products, right? We've got our backup product, we've got our management product,
yep,
the management pack for System Center. But it's like, I need a little bit more of a broader community. And then also, I needed something anchoring, like an anchoring event or experience or such. And we were promoting our first VeeamON event in 2014. So we created our own event, industry event, that started in 2014, and we had one in 2015. We're not having one in 2016 because we're moving it to the first half of the year for 2017, and it would have been too soon to have one in late October this year and, say, April or May of this year. So it was too soon. And that's why we shifted it. So after the first VeeamON, I'm like, okay, that's working. Let's build on that. And then in the first part of 2015, my team have set forth and launched this program, and we're now in our second year. And there are four evangelists on my team. So there's myself here in the States, Clint Wyckoff, who is in Arizona. And then we also have Mike Ressler in Belgium. And then a newest addition on our evangelist team, Michael White, who used to be at VMware, and then Data Gravity after that.
Yep.
So the four of us are working with a team, and we have two staff within our group. And we basically, I don't want to say we're doing deep profiling, because honestly, these types of people bubble up to the top organically. There's no real machine behind it that's right, like measuring click impressions and tweet, you know, reach and stuff like that. The kind of the guiding rule that I have is that this program has to be a group of people that my team, off the top of their head, knows that they are the best in the world at what they do with a good sense of what Veeam does. And what I mean by that is this is a collection of, you know, Microsoft Hyper-V people, a collection of VMware people, a collection of some of the storage people, some of the service provider people. And it's very concentrated within those communities. And, you know, John, you've been through it. You know, it's kind of weird when you get your peer from that other planet, you know, the Microsoft type and the VMware type together. And it's kind of funny because a lot of the same challenges exist in some of these different realms. And we've had this for the second year now. And my goal is to give them a little bit of roadmap, give them a little bit of a pretty comprehensive set of program benefits, like, you know, the backpacks, the shirts and stuff like that. And I have one rule for the staffer that buys it. I said, whatever you do, don't go ask the people that do the giveaways at VMworld and the like, where do you get your shirts? Don't ask them. Go somewhere else and get the nicest, most expensive thing you can find in that list. And so I put a pretty high bar on her to do that. And I think she does a good job. But basically, you know, I give them some stuff. And in the last 2 years also, we've provided an experience element. So we provided a comp trip to VeeamON last year. Nice. And we don't have VeeamON this year. So I had a real interesting conundrum. I don't want to make the program less valuable this year. So what I did was I gave them 2.5 days of exclusive content, and then we had a one-day regional event in the UK, in London. So VeeamON UK, basically, is a one-day event. And that's actually, in a way, a little bit better because it's more consumable than a full week. So we flew those who wanted out for all or part of that event and gave them a roadmap, opportunity to give some feedback for some upcoming messaging that we have, etc. Yeah. And, you know, I work really hard on the program and so does the rest of my team. But it's really a goal of just finding the best people who get what we do and also those adjacencies, you know, whether they're big on social or they're, you know, really good on the VMware or NetApp or Hyper-V or the cloud stuff, you know, or modern storage systems, you name it. You know, that's why they're there. And I try to keep it. I've got a target number, and I'm pretty close to that right now. But we've added new products over the years, right? So that's also made me have to think about bumping it up, and we got more products coming in the next couple of years and all. So that's a brief overview of it. And I don't promote it too much, I'll be honest with you. There's a blog post, there's a page, but that's really about it. It's not about making noise and chest beating about, oh, these people are the best or whatever.
Right.
I know they're good. They know they're good. But I don't want to distract them. They're busy enough. They don't have the time to, you know, get a lot of email or, you know, get distracted with a lot of different things because I don't want to turn them off in that regard. So I'm still figuring it out. I have absolutely no background in influencer marketing, but me and my team are figuring it out as we go.
Yeah, well, it's doing good. I mean, I came up. Michael Cade was the first person who turned me onto it. He blogs a lot about Veeam, and he's on the NetApp A team as well. And so, super sharp guy. He introduced me to Veeam early on, and so and then also introduced me to the Veeam podcast, which is where I learned about you. And so, yeah, I think you guys are doing some great things over there, and you have a ton of passionate people both in the field and on your team. So good work, man.
Appreciate that. And you know, John's one of our inaugural members. You know, he's an interesting one, by the way, John.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for a number of reasons. But in this particular example, you know, I take a lot of different things into consideration. Right? It's not just, oh, I run a blog or I'm a big deal or, you know, maybe I'm a VXpert. You know, it's more than that. Like, John was also very active on Spiceworks, which is a community in and of itself, right? So, you know, it's like all of those different things are things we look at. And I love it that it's not just a cookie cutter set of people. You know, they all come together with different backgrounds and such. And I love the group. They're an outstanding group. I couldn't be more happy with them.
It makes for very interesting pub conversations. You're right. Having the diverse backgrounds of not just regional. I mean, it really is a global organization. It's not overly centered in EMEA or North America like some other programs, but also just in terms of people's backgrounds. Like there's people who are, like you say, they're focused on the Microsoft. They're focused on storage. They're on VMware. There's people who represent small shops. Which a lot of these influencer programs really overlook the small, medium business, which is globally a lot of spend. It's just not necessarily focused.
Yep, that's true.
Well, yeah, the small business IT persona, I'll be frank with you guys. My biggest fear is that Veeam will abandon that with, you know, trying to, we're getting successful into the enterprise, right? Yep. And people that are in charge of sales are really happy about that. But me and the IT community, that it's a reverse funnel. What I mean by that is the SMB is much more vocal, sharing, willing to share their technology experiences. Yes. And the farther you go up the enterprise, that the, you know, the lids come on, right? Yep. They're not allowed to share details. Like when I used to work at the bank, it drove me crazy. I was doing amazing stuff, but I literally wasn't allowed to talk about any of it. Mm. But the SMB, they don't really have those. And I take that community aspect very seriously. I mean, I really appreciate it. I'm never going to abandon that. And, you know, in the room we had in London, John, we had, you know, some of the bigger enterprise type vanguards in there. We had some SMB ones as well. And I love that mix because you get all those different perspectives and it's not overwhelming. That's the big thing. You don't want to have a program diluted with too many members and the like. So I think we're good for now. I'm going to change it later, maybe grow it. But it's something that, you know, my team works pretty hard on.
The minute you want to expand the group, let me know because I'm all up for going to London with John. So you know, if you need an nice extra drive. VMware person, I'm there.
Well, the funny thing is that, John, I'll put you on a spot for a question. So in 2015, we took everyone to VMon, you know, a 3-4 day event type of thing where we had a track of dedicated content, but then it was intermixed with a large event. This one was much more romantic, as it were, right? There was a smaller event, but it was only one day. And then we had our own exclusive block of content. Forget London or Vegas or New Orleans or whatever. John, which one did you like better?
I felt like, I mean, this one, I got to know the rest of the Vanguard group a lot better. There is something to have it be a little more isolated. I don't know. They both have their charms just because VMon itself is just, was an awesome event. It's kind of like your comment earlier about the shirts. I think your people legitimately took cues from VMworld and said, you know, we're not going to do that. Like, for instance, putting a keynote at 8 o'clock in the morning at an IT conference is an awful idea. Everyone is asleep. Having a hard cutoff at 7:50 for breakfast with people willing to tackle you if you're trying to get breakfast is a bad idea. Breakfast should run till 10, specifically right. When you're in Las Vegas. It was, you know, the content was amazing. The speakers were amazing. But just how you did logistics for a you know, an early, you know, you're only into your second year. Veeam really, they show a lot of polish in everything they do from the products, but also to the events. And that kind of came through. That said, I did like London just because of, you know, getting to hang out with this group of people and get to know them a lot better and share experiences.
Well, I've been thinking about unapproved in budget, but I'm thinking about next year given the Vanguard's a choice. You could choose New Orleans or something like what we did in London. It might be back in London again, but the thought was, you know, first of all, some people just can't make the date, you know. So if you can't make that one, then you get the other one. So I always think about improving it, and like, you know, Kirsten works on the shirts and Dimitri works on the data points, the web page and all. So we put a lot of work into it, but that's good to know. I kind of felt that way too. I'll have to do a survey. That's the right thing to do. But no, yeah, I'm glad you like it. And, you know, those who might be interested, you know, I'll send like this one mysterious tweet saying, hey, Vanguard nominations are open. I'm going to target it for probably January, February time. And then, you know, we'll drop a post on the blog and such. But of course, you can always accost me on Twitter if you want more information on the program.
I'd also like to take this time to blame Rick for getting me into podcasting and community at a much bigger level. Because you actually were the first podcast I was ever on.
Really?
And yeah. And I remember I did a live event with you. Was at Spiceworks talking about Veeam and backup in general. And it was the first time I was talking to you after the event, and it made me realize that actually community involvement can actually be tied to your career advancement and not necessarily within a direction of its own, which tech marketing is heavily involved in. But it really made me realize that it was, you know, community involvement was critical to keeping my career going.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, that doesn't have to be a broad form thing. It can be. You can go into community involvement at any levels. You know, you just get on Twitter. Or if you're listening to this podcast, you're in. But also share it, you know, drop an opinion, those types of things. You sure start a blog and all, but everyone can contribute to this. And, you know, John, glad you said yes. You definitely bring a lot to the community. And I'm sure readers, listeners, you know, those type definitely enjoy your contributions.
When I came to VMware, I had already been doing the Tech on Tap podcast for a while at NetApp. And so I had been asked by VMware if I was interested in, you know, putting a podcast together here. And I said, well, let me give it some thought. Let me give it some time. These types of things need to happen organically. You have to meet people that you might want to do a podcast with. And, you know, let's see what happens. And my very first week on the job, I met John and we went out to dinner and we just got along really well. And John's this wealth of information. And he's also easy to talk to. And the minute he started telling me about a stolen casket in the same conversation as, you know, some of the features of vSAN, I said, this is the kind of guy I want to do a podcast with. So like within 24 hours of meeting him, I was like, hey, you want to do a podcast with me? Yeah. So thanks, John. I'm glad that you're doing the podcast.
I'm just remembering that story. And I'll actually the person responsible for that story will be at VMworld. So we'll get an interview with him then. Stay tuned.
All right. So let's talk some Veeam. Rick, why don't you give us the introduction to what Veeam is and what you guys do?
So at the highest level, Veeam is a software company. It's been a VMware partner since forever, and we're now in our 10th year of existence, believe it or not. But basically, you know, we started with a product, Veeam Backup and Replication, in 2008 that, you know, a lot of people would think has changed the innovation level that goes into backup software in the industry. So a lot of things have happened, but, you know, probably somebody's heard of Veeam if you're using VMware technologies. You know, we've expanded beyond just backing up VMware virtual machines, but by no means are we slowing down innovation in that space. In fact, I like looking through the details, right, when we do new releases. And the short answer, we call it availability today. But it starts with a backup job. It starts with, you know, moving data, encase these awesome infrastructures we make. In case something doesn't go as planned, we want to have a way to restore the virtual machines as soon as possible, right? So a lot of people come to backup for things like high-speed recovery and data loss avoidance. But there's a bigger story that we call availability that gives you capabilities like verifying that things are recoverable and having a test bed before you make a significant change, leveraging that data to make those tests before you actually implement in production, and having visibility to it all. That being said, I mean, that's the marketing story, but the reality is there's scores and scores and scores of very detailed, you know, especially in the VMware ecosystem, very detailed specific features that really make the backup story a lot better of a story today. So that's the elevator pitch.
Got it.
You know, we had some things that I want to highlight that I think are my favorite that we don't promote enough that are new-ish that apply a lot to VMware environments. And that's my favorite thing is this thing called direct NFS access. So if you have some NFS storage, especially if it's not one that we have an integration with, which would be NetApp at this time.
Okay.
But there's a lot of NFS out there, you know. So this direct NFS access is actually pretty cool. It's a data mover that will move it like direct SAN access is the best way to explain it. But in the lab, I got a 300% performance boost. This stuff is sick. I really like it. My favorite feature that we don't talk enough about besides that would be this thing called BitLooker. And I'm really happy because I made that name up.
BitLooker?
This is BitLooker. BitLooker, that's right.
You don't hire those at the conference in Vegas.
Absolutely not.
And you don't put them on a Ferris wheel?
Do not Google it, no.
Okay.
Anyways, the BitLooker is pretty cool because you guys will appreciate this. How many times have you seen like a VMDK grow with like a thin provisioned one especially, and maybe there's no array or nobody wants to get into the PowerShell or whatever to do like any thin provision reclaim?
Mm-hmm.
You've seen these. The disks get big, but you know that they're not really using all of that.
Exactly.
Well, BitLooker, when we back up, we're actually looking at the file system table to ignore what we call dirty blocks. So it's the simplest thing. We started this actually in 2011 by skipping the page file because we would just look at the file table, determine the coordinates of the page file in the disk geometry, and then skip that on the data mover.
Right.
But we're expanding that to actually read parts of the file table that include deleted blocks, which have still claimed space on the VMDK, but we're actually now able to skip those. And here's a little tip for any listeners out there, and you can actually even do this with a free trial of Veeam Backup and Replication. You can use BitLooker even in a replication job. So if you have a virtual disk and you don't have an array or you don't have the PowerShell or PowerCLI prowess to do any thin provision reclaim. You can actually do a replication job and do what I would call a planned failover. So replicate something to something new. And when you fail it over, the disk that you'll have left has all those dirty blocks removed.
Nice.
So if you had some VM that you had to hold a terabyte of stuff for, and then you deleted that terabyte of stuff, if you replicated it and failed it over, that terabyte of stuff is gone. You know, so little things like that can, you know, be a nice little pro tip that people can have. And I the right thing I should do is make a script that would like do that for you. There's a small amount of downtime, but it can really put you in a better spot, because an end all be all thin provision reclaim is really hard to come by. But BitLooker is a technology that, you know, I was in a pinch with one of my little things at home, and I'm like, well, I could use that. And I did, and it was awesome.
So what you're referencing here, the high watermarking of VMDKs, because NTFS and most file systems are not thin friendly, they always write into new space. We actually have had a discussion about this. So if you're listening to the podcast now, go find the Vaughn Stewart conversation from the Austin VMUG talking about that. And yeah, the reclaim of it right now is requiring, there's a lot of caveats around it. But this is a really interesting technology, because I think in their case, they were saying they saw 30 to 40%. By reducing out that space or going through the reclaim hassle, it's a 30 to 40% reduction. So if that's a 30 to 40% reduction in IO for your replication or your backup jobs, that's a huge deal.
Absolutely.
It is a huge deal, but also just you could make it a spring cleaning in the outage, you know, like a planned outage. Let me rephrase that. You know, the notion of a failover in Veeam is like a sub 1 or 2 minute situation. So you can, and then the best part is you can test it before you go forth and reclaim space. But, you know, if you look at a storage profile, especially on a larger environment, and, you know, maybe you have some tier one stuff that has this space that doesn't match up. The OS says you're using this, and vSphere says you're using that plus a lot more. Those might be candidates for this type of cleanup. And I like this approach because it works on any VMware virtual machine. So it's one of those things that, you know, local storage, enterprise, SAN, doesn't matter. You can reclaim at will. And that came out last year, but that's a little thing that, you know, we promoted. But when I put it in practical terms like that, it's a real benefit. But you have to be careful. That high watermark of the VMDK, that it's going to come back. This isn't a one-time fix, right? Because the OSs do what OSs do, and the data does what it does. So there might be things that come and go. So you'll have it float back up, and then you might want to do it again. But, you know, you don't want to get into the business of, you know, on scale, looking exactly at what comes into every single virtual machine, because it becomes unmanageable. But when you do see these anomalies happen, it's kind of nice to know that you can, you know, pull some of that back.
Well, I had a conversation with a large customer who they had over a petabyte that was falling into this zombied zone of high watermarks. And if you time that with your DR testing, where you're doing a failover event anyways and then a fail back, I mean, you could conceivably do that. You know, let's say you did DR test once a quarter. That could just become a secondary benefit of your DR testing.
That's an interesting point, because then you actually have legitimate immediate cost savings to actually doing what you're supposed to do for DR.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Our DR failover will get, if we test our DR failover and do a full failover and fail back, we'll get 30% of our storage back. That's a fun conversation.
Yeah. Motivation to test.
Absolutely. I never even thought about that. I mean, I was thinking failover on site, you know, and
I've already trademarked and patented it. It's sorry, Rick, you know.
But no, that's an interesting point, John. And I think that when you put that in immediate CapEx savings, because tier one, or especially in the tier one storage conversation, that's immediate money that people can put eyes on. So that's good.
So Rick, the products that you guys offer, you've got the Veeam Availability Suite, and that that comprises of the Veeam Backup and Replication, right?
Yes, that is the combination of Backup and Replication and Veeam One. So Veeam One is really good about telling you things like how many IOPS this is taking, or when am I going to run out of backup storage, or what VMs do I not have enough restore points on, sure, et cetera. But the backup and replication is really the data mover, right? So makes backups, makes replicas. And BitLooker's built in. The best part is there's absolutely no user interface to it. There's a checkbox that says skip dirty blocks, but it's on by default because they're really useless upon a restore. So that was the logic. Don't move them if you don't need them.
Is there any type of reporting on, hey, since your last backup, you saved this much space?
That would be a great idea. I don't think there is such a number reported on summary, but I have in my personal little stash a screenshot of a really good example where I, in one particular thing, you know, I saved 150 gigs of tier one storage because it's very clear read and transferred is where it kicks in. And the read data and then the transferred data, it just displays a significant difference. There's no like, you know, no email of the day, BitLooker saved you this much, because really it doesn't save you on primary until you actually restore or fail over, as it were. So it's kind of a, it's money in the bank that you haven't spent yet, as it were.
I like it. So what are some of the new things that are in Availability Suite 9? I know that's a newer product for you.
Yeah. We're already working on the next one, but or the 9.5. But, you know, some specific things that are a big deal are we introduced this notion of a scale-out backup repository. And it's kind of funny because every time I explain that to people, I say it's like SDRS clusters for backup storage. And it's great because you can pool together backup resources and get better utilization out of different resources, set policy, locality rules, which are really nice because you might want your full backups on the dedupe appliance for space savings, but you might want your increments on general purpose storage for IO speed. Right? So you kind of get the best of both worlds. You're going to get incredible dedupe, yet better performance on increments, right? Yep. Little things like that. We added EMC VNX, VNXE, VNX2 arrays as our integrated sources, so we can move data directly from the storage snapshot in the course of a backup, which is pretty tight. The other thing is, and even if you don't use Veeam for backup, but you do have the EMC VNX, VNXE, VNX2, or all the NetApp arrays, or HP Store Virtual or Store Serve, you can use Veeam, even a free edition, to read those storage snapshots to do restores only. So what do I mean? If you have a schedule, like every hour, every day, whatever, take a storage snapshot. And unless you have like really deep expertise in the storage, you know, sometimes those storage snapshots are hard to use.
Yeah.
But Veeam Explorer for Storage Snapshot will allow you to crack into that and pull out a VM or a file from the OS or an exchange email right from that storage snapshot schedule that you've already taken. And that's free. And Nimble will be coming later this year to that. So it's really a really pretty powerful technique considering it's free. And it's one of those things that, well, if you have those arrays, there's really no reason not to use this. We added the HP Store Once Catalyst for our integrated target for dedupe appliances. That's pretty cool. A couple architecture improvements that allowed like standalone consoles and distributed architectures to work a little bit better. You know, it's kind of tough. I can't remember all these features. Oh, the other one, Oracle. You know, a lot of people have Oracle,
yep,
but aren't DBAs. And that's a really interesting situation. So if you have an Oracle database, but you're not an Oracle DBA, how do you do amazing recoveries? Well, the logic is Veeam Explorer for Oracle is exactly that tool because you don't need any RMAN scripting experience or anything. And you could do like point in time or per transaction level restores with Oracle databases. That's pretty cool. A couple other improvements. The big one beyond that was the ability to do Cloud Connect replication. And that one's something that a lot of people, especially those with a single site, you know, don't have a secondary site type of arrangement. It's like, well, I really want disaster recoveries. I might be holding my backups off site, but what if I lost the site and I don't have another one? This basically allows a completely abstracted vSphere host from a service provider, most of them in the vCloud Air network, by the way, but basically a completely abstracted host provides me basically a resource pool, and I can take a backup from anything that runs VMware or Hyper-V and put it into this service provider. And basically, I can fail over and run on their compute, memory, and storage resources. And I can even extend my on-site network to that service provider for what I would call a partial failover. Now, that's a really interesting concept because imagine you have a data center with three primary storage arrays. And pick your least favorite one. That one died. So you got two-thirds of your arrays are good, but one is not. Well, with this notion of a partial failover, you don't have to fail everything over to the service provider. You can just fail over those, you know, 28 whatever virtual machines that were on there.
Okay.
And from a network perspective, there's no IP network changes at all. You'll have some latency effect. I just did it today for someone. I was having, you know, 1 millisecond ping latency, then it went to like 32, 36 millisecond latency.
Yeah,
but
course.
The app is good enough and absolutely happy with that. So a lot of little things like that make a big difference, right? Because it's one of those things that people really want options, right? You know, maybe I'm ready for DR. Maybe I'm wanting to hold backups offsite. Maybe I'm finally going to consolidate data centers or drop tape, whatever, you name it. Lots of little features, you know, came in version 9, but that's a brief run-up of some of the big things. And then, like I said, Nimble's coming soon. We have some other things we haven't yet announced, but, you know, we'll be doing that later in the year.
So where do you stand on the question of whether or not a snapshot is truly a backup?
Oh, I love that question. A snapshot by itself is absolutely not a backup. But a snapshot in part of a workflow of a managed data process is absolutely part of a backup. So what do I mean by that? Well, the snapshot goes away and I'm not going to restore to that snapshot. But it also is important to note that before a snapshot is taken, a few things need to happen. You know, an application needs to be prepared or a file system quiesced. Those types of things, at least in the Veeam example, we do that. And when that's done, when you take that snapshot, that point in time is a completely application and file system consistent view of that workload. And then that snapshot's removed once the data mover is done, right? So in conjunction with other things, a snapshot is absolutely part of a good managed data flow, but simply a raw snapshot by itself is not enough today. At least you run the risk of something going wrong.
Sure.
You know, that being said, I realize our engine, you know, is very specifically latched to the vSphere APIs for data protection. But for some people who really don't like that idea, you know, we have a different product that we've released last year, and we have a Linux equivalent going out later this year. For Windows and Linux OSs, it's basically an in-guest agent type of backup. We have that, but I like to throw the numbers down. And basically, not even with version 9, with version 8 that came out in 2014, we can restore 47 different ways for VMware virtual machines. Nobody can touch that. That's from one agentless backup. With the this agent product that we have, it's probably like 7 or 8 different ways you can restore. So the flexibility of, you know, doing it this way we've built on for almost 10 years is, in my opinion, you just can't touch those options. You know, you got storage integration, you've got portability to service providers, you've got the application logic, you've got, you know, instant VM recovery. There's so many different things that we can do with a virtual machine, especially a VMware virtual machine, that we can use, you know, a snapshot as part of that data movement process. And when we look at it that way, you know, those availability options just outweigh any critiques. And I'd also say that there's a certain consequence of being so agnostic, right? I like to tell people that just because, you know, you and I both use vSphere, that's really about it we have in common. Let's start talking about the apps and the infrastructure involved, because one thing I know about storage is that there's always a lesser expensive option and somebody's going to find it. And
yeah,
basically, because of that, there might be IO bottlenecks and they can't move data fast enough and all those different things. And it's one of those things that, you know, I need the stars to be in alignment, in a sense of I need people to make good choices on their storage and host their cluster design, their storage investments, not just on primary, but also on their backup storage. I've seen plenty of people have these, you know, outstanding all-flash arrays for their production vSphere environment. And then I talk, well, what are you putting your backups on? And they'll just, I just will freak out. It's like, I would never
use a two-drive QNAP, you know? Not the good QNAP, the one with like the Marvel MIPS processor, not even an ARM. Like, we're going down to MIPS.
Yeah, there's a whole long line, right? There's some QNAPs, there's some Netgears, there's some Drobos, there's some Synologies that those in their own circumstance have a good use case. But holding terabytes of all-flash data are not, and they're using like the 6 or whatever terabyte drives too with that. So I'm
low latency tape.
Yeah, low latency tape. There you go. So it's like, I'm always talking to people about how to move the knobs and dials. It's what people want. And, you know, I'm not paying the bill for it, but it's just one of those things. If I can help people in the Veeam example, the actual process of moving data, that's where I help them the most. But also kind of open their eyes to, well, you know, look at what you have for where you're putting your backups and the profile associated with it. Same thing for, well, what are you running your VMs on? You know, so I always, you know, look at all the dots to try to, you know, get their line drawn a little bit better each time.
I mean, have you seen anyone using all flash for their backup targets, just because, I mean, we're getting 16 terabyte backup drives or flash drives now. And from a cost basis, I mean, I saw a quote recently with capacity optimized flash from a major vendor for 56 cents a gigabyte. So, I mean, flash is falling so much. And I've heard some of the Micron guys joke. I mean, that's what the read intensive drives, just because their write latencies aren't good. You can use them for backup.
Well, I have seen a few people explore the ideas of all flash for backup. And especially once we had that scale out backup repository, they were wanting to maybe put their increments there, you know?
Have it as the landing zone for like faster restores.
Well, especially the increments, because the increments don't usually dedupe as well. So they were thinking about a small slice of that. And then I've seen other people take PCI SSDs. They took a couple of those and made a very small backup target for certain workloads. Okay. You know, like a tiered approach. This was before we had the scale out arrangement, because now people are kind of sorting out the best practices of how to use like a all flash or, you know, SSD type storage, or as I like to say, non-rotational storage. But what I have seen, by the way, I have seen people use Tentries as backup targets, but it's usually in a VMDK. So usually, and that's like a, you know, VM optimized flash aware or VM aware type of storage that automatically tiers, you know, between the hot and cold on SSD and rotational storage. So I've seen some of that in the wild, but people are looking at it. I don't know what's best, you know, right now. There's a lot of moving parts, and I know that our scale out backup repository has some features planned for it that might make me think about how would I best use non-rotational storage in that. But right now, if I had to design something today, I would make a scale out backup repository with my increments and my full backups on two different places. And if only one of those could be used for non-rotational, I would put incremental backups there. And then all the full backups I'd either put on dedupe if I was fancying deduplication, or general purpose storage, or if I had the money and space, all flash. But then, you know, that's the other thing you can do is do all flash, but then put in like a volume level dedupe, like a ZFS or Windows Server 2012 dedupe, right? That type of thing might be a good use case there.
By the way, Pete, we need to get a snapshot suck quote from Rick, so for our VMworld presentation.
That's not a bad idea.
Rick, I'm not sure if you noticed, but Pete and I, our session was accepted for VMworld entitled Snapshot Suck. Cool. Discussion why vSAN and vVols will solve all of your operational problems.
Well, you could also say they don't suck there. And that's simply put the way that writes are coordinated. And it's like all grown up now. So if you had to explain it to your kid, that's how you'd do it.
Yeah, I guess a more appropriate title would have been Snapshots Used to Suck.
Yeah, no, you can still change. I don't think they've printed anything, but because of your background with Veeam, the original kind of customers or target was often, you know, mid-market, smaller shops. As you guys have grown up into the service provider space and scaled, what are the things you've had to deploy, or what tools have you made available, and what kind of scales are customers running Veeam at, you know, on the larger side, and what tools are they using?
You know, that's part of growing up. And what I would say is that, you know, it used to be everything could be done in the UI, and that was the answer. A few years ago, we implemented a PowerShell extension, and then with parts of the product now, there's a RESTful API. And especially as we've invested a lot in cloud and service provider technologies, when you talk about that scale discussion, you really can't do it without the RESTful APIs and PowerShell. And really, people want more than that too. Oh, yeah. So, you know, we're never going to be done with that journey. But like, for example, the management level layer of sorts of backup and replication is this tool called Veeam Backup Enterprise Manager. And the Enterprise Manager basically aggregates all of the consoles that you might have. So the installations that actually do the backups, it's a web engine that sits to manage all of those. Now, when I say manage, you don't provide granular like adjustments to the schedule or, you know, exclude this file from the backup. But if you wanted to provide some like self-service elements, like if I had a help desk, and I want the help desk to do all file restores, which is a big, you know, use case. You can give the help desk access through this web interface to do that. And the best part is that's all available in the API. So if there's, you know, customers that have like an enterprise system or portal for those types of things, and, you know, this can all be done in, I'm using my hands, air quote, API talk. If you needed to restore a file called John's Notes from meeting 523.doc, right? And you don't even know what server it came on, right? Because there's a lot of servers, a lot of different file shares and whatever that might be in place. You could basically string out a search, where's that file? And the help desk could restore it. Now, in the web interface, they could say, oh, did you save that file in, you know, / server name, / file share name, you know, John's folder, you know, file name dot doc or whatever. You can find it that way. But it's really nice because you don't even need to know what VM this data is on. Because if you think about the role of the help desk, you know, the user thinks it's on the server. Well, the infrastructure person will say, well, what server? Well, the help desk will say, was this it? And the user will say yes, and then it's that easy. But that's all available in API, and we can also put a couple of application situations in there like Exchange and SQL as well. But, you know, the PowerShell, a lot of people that manage a lot of jobs like backup administrators, you know, we have a PowerShell extension that helps them out there too. Of course, people are wanting like integration with other portals. They're wanting Puppet. People want a lot of things. But, you know, what we have right now is the RESTful API and PowerShell.
Awesome. So it works. Does it work with vCloud Air then?
Yeah, actually in vCloud Air, in fact, if you go to the homepage, in the vCloud Air marketplace, I think Veeam is like one of the top three ones up there. I've done everything I can to be in there. So nice. When we look at vCloud Air, you know, that cloud discussion, right? It comes up a lot, right? Yeah. A lot of people say, hey, does Veeam do the cloud? And I'm like, well, what do you want to do to the cloud? You know, but all the different hyperpublic clouds kind of have a different angle to them. And last year, so 2015, when they had PEX, we took a strong message for vCloud Air, and we put in, we've done what we need to do with VMware on the partnership side so that resellers are allowed to run Cloud Connect in vCloud Air, which would host people's backups. And that's especially interesting for the big network of reseller partners who want to get into the business of providing a service provider type technology, but they don't want to invest in a data center. You can run that all in vCloud Air right now. So I've got a couple white papers on that at veeam.com on the partner side of that. But the story right now in vCloud Air is for partners.
Awesome. All right. Well, Rick, are you going to be at VMworld?
I am going to be probably at both VMworlds, definitely the one in Las Vegas, which is kind of cool to be back in Vegas, by the way. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Nice. What sessions are going to be at VMworld? I'm curious.
You know, I'm lowering my head in shame, but I actually only have a booth, you know, expo only pass. So the way I usually do it is I usually do the US one primarily for networking, but then when I go to the one in Europe, I'll get a full pass and go to sessions. And so I kind of also want to see people's reviews of some sessions before I kind of build a diary. So I haven't really given any thought on what I would attend in Barcelona. But I do know that Veeam has two sessions. One's going to be focused on that Cloud Connect DR as a service element. And then the other one's going to be kind of a deep dive of our 9.5 release that will be out later this year. So basically, it's going to be, you know, extending that availability conversation for vSphere environments. Those are the two Veeam-sponsored sessions that will be available.
Nice, nice. All right. Well, yeah, we will definitely see you there at VMworld. John and I are both going to be at the Vegas and the EMEA ones. And so I'll be sure to attend the Veeam session so I can learn some more. We will add some links to the show notes of this page in reference to the white papers that we talked about and to your blog. So, John, you have anything else for Rick before we take off?
I was going to say, trying to think of something clever to say. let's take a snapshot and close this one out.
Well done. Well done. All right. All right. Well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. Subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes by going to Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. Next week, we're going to bring in Eric Siebert to talk about the top 100 V blogs and some HPE V vols. And so until then, bye for now. Get your Veeam on, John.
Oh, man. You know, I forgot to give a shout out to Joe Gramillion, the guy who really got me involved with Veeam from the beginning. So.
Well, you just did.
There we go.
So. Oh, yeah.
Rick, I hope you enjoy your holiday. We appreciate you coming in, and happy 4th, buddy.
I will enjoy it. Ciao for now, guys.
We're not putting any surprise, like 8 minutes of dead air, are we on this one, Pete?
Pete is right.